Welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free, expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your game. Today's episode of the Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by SomersetSportsPerformance.com. Well, today on the podcast, we've got three great listener questions that I'm going to answer to the best of my ability, and I think they're all very interesting topics. First of all, we're going to talk about different follow-through techniques on your ground strokes. There's three kind of main different techniques that high-level players are using these days to finish their forehand ground strokes, and we're going to talk about the differences between those and which that you should be working on. We're also going to talk about the differences between doubles and singles and just basically being comfortable switching back and forth between those two very different types of tennis. And lastly, we're going to discuss increasing your level in ground strokes and specifically dealing with deep, well-hit ground strokes to your side of the court. So let's get started. Sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction.
And now it's time for Essential Tennis Q&A.
All right, let's get started on our first topic on today's podcast. And it comes to us from Mark H., who posted on the forums at EssentialTennis.com. He wrote and left his question saying, "In the past, I recall that players, most of whom used Eastern grips, were taught to prepare a forehand with a loop backswing, then extend up and out with their racket pointing towards the intended trajectory of the ball. Still, I'd noticed that some players with a fairly classic-looking forehand, like Davenport and Sampras, sometimes finished with a supinating position, i.e. their forearms straight up and their rackets to the right of their forearm, after hitting a sharp-angled cross-court shot. This is a follow-through that Nadal often seems to use with his forehand." Yes, that's correct. Moving on, Mark says, "In contrast, right-handed Western and semi-Western players more typically seem to complete their follow-through pronating their forearm around the left side of their head. As a 4.0 righty with a semi-Western and Western grip and a loop backswing, this is the follow-through that I use." So Mark is talking about kind of more of a conventional follow-through with his hand finishing over on the opposite side of his body and up over his shoulder. So now coming to his question here, and also one other type of follow-through. "More recently, however, I've noted players using a windshield wiper follow-through on their forehand. What factors dictate which type of follow-through that one should use on their forehand?" Mark H. Well, Mark, these are really good observations. And in fact, one of the observations that he made was something that I wasn't even really aware of as far as technique is concerned. He talked about Pete Sampras, and obviously he was kind of the first person to really make famous the running forehand and hitting that aggressively, kind of from a more of a defensive position. He would bait players into hitting down the line to his forehand side and then kind of purposefully get them to try to put him out of position on his right side and then use his running forehand as a weapon, whereas previously it would be seen as kind of a defensive shot. Anyway, he finishes that stroke, and Mark was kind enough to provide me with some video on the forums, a YouTube video of Sampras hitting that shot, and he would actually finish with his palm facing upwards towards the sky. He was talking about supinating. That's the rotation of your hand from straight, perpendicular to the ground, to facing upwards towards the sky or towards the ceiling. And that's as opposed to how most swings, or I guess I shouldn't say most, but more most traditional swings, all traditional swings finish by pronating your hand. That's turning your hand downwards or to the inside. Anyway, I wasn't really aware that he did that on that particular swing, and it was very interesting for me to see that. And Mark H. is correct. Nadal does that as well on his, some people call it kind of a helicopter follow-through or a reverse forehand follow-through, finishing with his hand on his dominant side. By the way, as I'm talking about this, it's worth noting that I'm now starting to post videos of my answers here on the podcast on YouTube. And here and there, I'm going to start using that more to demonstrate little technical things. Supinate and pronate is something that I just demonstrated quickly to the camera. So check out my YouTube videos at YouTube/EssentialTennis. Now, Mark, moving on to your question here, what factors dictate which type of follow-through that one should use on the forehand? This is an excellent question and something I could spend an entire show on for sure. I think it's that important of a question. I'm going to try to get all my main points in here quickly and try to get across what I think is most important here. As I said, great observations. You have a good eye for technique. And as I said before also, I hadn't really noticed that Sampras specifically had actually opened his racket up as he followed through on that running forehand during his follow through. And that's very interesting to me. These three specific techniques that you discussed, they should be used during different specific situations to accomplish different results with the ball. They're all kind of independent swings, and you will typically see professional and high-level players use them during specific point situations. Let's talk about them one at a time. I'm going to call the one that you use typically, I'm going to call that a conventional follow-through, finishing with your dominant hand pronated and over to the opposite side of your body. For you, that's over to the left side. You said to the left side of your head, so that's correct. Finishing high and over to the opposite side of your body. A conventional follow-through, and by the way, that's opposed to what I call an old-school follow-through, just finishing with your hand and your racket pointed forwards towards your target. But a conventional follow-through gives you a good combination of drive and spin. It does that because you are swinging forwards and rotating your core towards your target. That provides the drive that you need to hit a good, solid forward shot. That's the drive that we're talking about. It allows you to spin the ball as well because you're finishing with the racket high also. You mentioned finishing on the left side of your head up over your shoulder there, and that's an excellent place to finish. It gives you a good height, good vertical path with your racket, and also good drive, good forward path with your racket by finishing through the point of contact and then moving on forwards and up over to your left side with a high position. Now, it's best used when you're on balance and in a good position. And you can both hit a good deep drive or a looping topspin shot by using that follow-through technique. And when you see the pros finish, when they're in good balance, they're not being pushed back, they're not being pulled to the right or to the left on their forehand. When they're in a good, comfortable position and they're able to make a solid swing at the ball, this is you will still see them often finish in this position. The conventional follow-through, high and over to your opposite side, it's not gone away. Players like Nadal, who he's kind of famous for the reverse follow-through, and other players who very often use a windshield wiper follow-through, they still do finish this way. So it's still a very relevant shot, and I'm a 5.0 player myself, and it's still the way that I follow through most of the time as well. Now let's talk about the reverse follow-through. This creates heavy topspin because it has kind of an extreme vertical racket path. The racket is going straight up from your dropped position with the racket past the point of contact, and the racket continues on upwards to finish on your dominant side. So the racket does not wrap around to the opposite side of your body. This is used to hit heavy topspin. It's best used when you're on the run and still wanting to attack, because you can still accelerate your racket at the ball quickly and follow through. It's very difficult when you're on the run way out wide to come across your body with your racket, because that pulls your racket the opposite direction that your body is moving. So it's easiest to just swing your racket straight upwards towards the ball instead of coming across your body. It's very difficult to do that when you're on the run. So when you're on the run and still wanting to attack, this is the best thing to do. When you're falling back or taking the ball on the rise, oftentimes a reverse follow-through is the most comfortable way to do it when you're still trying to accelerate and hit heavy topspin and still hit an aggressive ball, even though you're in a kind of an uncomfortable position. Also, when you're wanting to hit a dipping or sharp angle forehand, the extremeness of the vertical path of the racket on this shot lends itself well to being able to dip the ball short or at a sharp angle because you're hitting a lot of topspin. So that's what a reverse forehand is good for, reverse forehand follow-through. Lastly, we have the windshield wiper follow-through. This creates heavy topspin and also lends itself to creating a lot of power as well. And the reason for that is this racket path typically is kind of naturally produced when a player is swinging extremely fast at the ball. It's not that the racket is hitting the ball and then coming directly across to finish in a windshield wiper follow-through position. The racket still moves upwards. We're still making topspin, and we're still swinging upwards at the ball. However, the racket is moving so fast that it immediately gets to the top of its the peak of its racket path and then comes down and across to finish low over on the other side. If you were to try to finish in kind of a conventional over the shoulder follow through while accelerating the racket as fast as the professional players typically do, you would basically just end up whacking yourself in the shoulder or in the back really hard over and over again. And clearly that's not something that they want to do. So rather than stop and slow the racket down up over their shoulder with all the racket head speed that they've produced, they just move the racket a little farther over to the left and allow it to slow down and come over to their left hip if they're right-handed. And so that's where the windshield wiper follow-through comes into play. It's used when in balance and attacking using tons of racket head speed. They're swinging the racket extremely fast. It's used typically when attacking on a short ball or just generally hitting the snot out of the ball. When professional players are really going for a big shot and they need a lot of spin, they need a lot of drive, oftentimes this is the position that they finish in with their dominant hand and their racket over at their opposite hip. Their racket has come up and then down again over on their opposite side. Now, just to wrap this up, Mark, and I kind of have answered your question already. You said what factors dictate what type of follow-through one should use. Well, I gave you some situations there for each of those follow-throughs that make the most amount of sense. What positions or what situations that you should be using each of these follow-throughs. Now, all three of these swings are something that are used out of necessity by the pros. In both the reverse forehand follow-through and the windshield wiper follow-through, I talked about the fact that they're still, even though they're not in an ideal situation in the reverse follow-through, in the case of the reverse follow-through, even though a player is not in a great position, they're still trying to hit the ball very aggressively. In the windshield wiper follow-through, again, they're more in balance this time, and they're trying to hit the ball very aggressively. The pros use these swings out of necessity, and these types of swings typically, I won't even say typically, I'm not even going to be nice about it. These types of swings are not necessary to the average level player. All right. So if you are a 3.5 level player, these types of swings really don't apply to you. The pros use these types of swings because they're trying, even when they're a little out of position or in position, to make a big swing at the ball. So many people don't understand how aggressively the professional players are swinging at the ball. It's incredible. If you haven't seen professional players play in person, or if you haven't hit against somebody who's played on the professional tour, you have no idea. And these guys are putting tons of pace and spin on the ball. And that's why they come up with these more modern kind of contemporary swings. They use a little bit more creativity in finishing their swings because they're having to come up with a ton of racket head speed. And so finishing in a more conventional place with the racket just doesn't work. And so they come up with other ways to swing at the ball and still accelerate the racket a great deal. Now, when playing tennis at full pace, I utilize all three of these techniques depending on the situation and the shot that I'm trying to attempt. I use all three of these. However, that being said, nobody has ever taught me a windshield wiper follow-through or a reverse forehand follow-through. That might come as a surprise to you guys. When growing up and learning how to swing at a tennis ball, I was never taught these things. My coach never sat me down and said, all right, now we're going to work on a windshield wiper forehand follow-through. That's not something that I was taught. However, as I became stronger and stronger, and as I began to play more and more advanced players, I had to start accelerating my racket more and more. And this is something that just kind of develops naturally. I'm not saying that nobody teaches this, and you can't learn this from a teaching professional. No, that's not true. But what I'm trying to get across is, I feel like that as I go through the internet and see people trying to learn tennis, I see players who are just starting to learn, and they might not feel that they're just starting to learn, but it's the truth. They're a 3.0 or a 3.5 level player, and they're putting in lots of time trying to learn this type of technique, and they're just not swinging at the ball fast enough, or they're not good enough that they should be swinging at the ball that fast in the first place. And they're just chasing after things that aren't appropriate for them. So for most of my listeners out there, focus on the conventional type of swing, finishing on the opposite side of your body with the racket high over your opposite shoulder, and focus on hitting that as consistently as possible. You can still hit a very aggressive stroke with that follow through. And when I teach, that's pretty much what I use all the time. Every swing, I just finish in a conventional way because I'm just not accelerating at the ball enough that it's really even appropriate for me to do anything else. It's not necessary. So I'm not going to complicate things any more than I have to. As you become a stronger player and are able to attack consistently, the other swings will come into play as well. But not until, and Mark, you're getting pretty close to that, being a 4.0 player. To move up to a 4.5 level, you're probably going to start experimenting with things like this to hit the ball more aggressively than you are now. And hopefully I outlined well enough for you the circumstances where those types of follow-throughs are appropriate. All right, well, that brings that question to an end, at least my outline. I could talk a lot more about that, and hopefully you guys can tell that it's something that I feel strongly about. If you're a middle-of-the-road player and you're looking to increase the level of your game, coming up with professional-type swings like this is not something that's really going to help you at this point. You have to get good and solid at a more conventional swing first, and as you become more and more skilled and more advanced, you can start working on the other stuff as well, but more than likely, those types of techniques will just kind of come naturally to you as you start to accelerate your swings more. Mark, thank you for the great question, and hopefully that answers it and is helpful to you, and I look forward to seeing more of you on the forums. All right, next up we have a question from John in Santa Cruz, California. John sent this to me as an email. However, he also posts on the forums under John in Real Life. And John, we've really enjoyed having you on the forums. We always love to see you posting there. John's very enthusiastic and has been posting some great videos of his strokes and point play as well. So it's great to have you on the forums, John. John wrote to me asking about his doubles versus singles play, and I'll read you his question here. Hi there, Ian. I succeed, even dominate, in doubles at my level, but I'm only an average singles player, even though I've been working to improve between the skinny lines. And the part that frustrates me the most is I don't seem to use the very relaxed confidence and shot-making skills that make me a good doubles player in my singles game. Here are a few examples. In doubles, when I'm at the baseline and my two opponents are at the net, I can calmly and effectively change the pace of my returns, hit a dipper at their toes, or fire a quick topspin lob to their baseline. In singles, I usually hit a rushed passing shot wide or into the net. At the net in doubles, I move well, easily flowing back and forth and side to side with the point, and get so many balls with ease, I make my opponents hit terrible shots in an effort to avoid me. In singles, I get tentative, trying to steer my volleys instead of being deliberate and decisive. Could you talk about translating skills from one game to the other, John? Sure, John. And that's a good question. And I'm glad that you brought it up because I think transitioning from doubles to singles is something that a lot of players around your level don't do a good job of. A lot of times they get really enthusiastic and into one or the other, and then they kind of just leave the other one alone. And I've seen it go both ways. Sometimes people pick up singles first and kind of just leave doubles by the wayside, or vice versa. And I think that's a shame because both games, singles and doubles, teach you a great deal about tennis in different ways. doubles obviously is a very net oriented game, and it just has to improve your net game. If you're not a doubles player now, I highly recommend getting out there and playing doubles, because it's such a learning experience up at the net. And also you get to learn how to play with a partner and be a team player, and the strategy is completely different from singles. And also vice versa, if you're a doubles player now and you're listening to this and you haven't played much singles, get out and do it. It's going to help your tennis game. Your ground strokes will improve. Learning how to cover the court effectively, your court coverage will improve. There's all kinds of things that are complementary to both sides, but that are really focused on in one or the other, doubles or singles. So let me encourage you guys, in light of John's question here, to get out there and really experience both sides of the equation. Well, John, to answer your question, doubles and singles are really, as I just kind of laid out a little bit, they're very different games. It may not seem like it at first, because the strokes and techniques used are the same, and you outlined kind of the use of some of the same strokes in each case. Ground strokes, clearly you have to use both ground strokes and volleys in both doubles and singles, but there's just more of an emphasis on one in doubles and the other in singles, etc. Anyway, it may not seem like they should be very different, because a lot of times the techniques that are being used are the same. However, the strategy, the pace of play, and the overall feel of both of them are really completely different. And when it comes down to it, even though a lot of the techniques used are the same, they're really, in my mind, really completely, almost completely different sports altogether. There's certainly different games. And they each take a lot of experience to get comfortable with. And that's really going to be the overall theme of my answer here. But basically, in doubles, points in general are fast-paced, they're quick-moving, and in general, you have very little time to set up and think and react. Everything happens at a very quick pace in doubles. And if you're not privy to the doubles experience, if you haven't done a lot of doubles play, it's very easy to get very overwhelmed very quickly by the pace of how quickly things are happening back and forth. And if you're not used to that pace of play, you can fall behind mentally very quickly. And I'll use myself as an example there. I don't play all that often anymore, but when I do go out and play a full speed game of doubles, it takes my eyes a good half an hour, 45 minutes to pick up the pace again and speed up, because it's just a very fast pace of play. And if it's not something that you do often, you know, it's just something that's going to be uncomfortable. Now, John, you've had problems the opposite direction. You're comfortable with doubles, but not in singles. And so basically, you're not used to having that extra amounts of time and the kind of the ball coming at you. And it's very obvious to you what the setup is here. It's very obvious to you, your court position, your opponent's court position, and you identify very quickly what you're supposed to do. But almost because of that extra time, you're making errors. And obviously, I can understand why that's so frustrating to you, clearly, because you understand what you're supposed to do, but you're just not quite executing. So in doubles, everything is fast-paced, quick-moving, little time to set up, etc. In singles, points in general, comparatively, are much slower paced. You have more time to think. And it's more of a court coverage game and a cat and mouse game, playing with your opponent, positioning the ball and positioning yourself. Whereas doubles is more of a kind of a smash and grab type of game. Definitely at higher levels, you need to attack quickly, and you have to set yourself up quickly and then take advantage of your opportunities immediately to be able to come out on top. In singles, you have more leeway and more time to work the point. And there's less working of the point in doubles. In doubles, it's very quick. Anyway, I won't talk anymore about the differences between the two. Obviously, you guys, if you didn't fully understand it before, I've described it enough now. But in general, people feel rushed and anxious when moving from singles to doubles because of that lack of time. However, since you've started off being used to doubles, the extra time just seems to be causing you to tighten up and choke a little. And so my best advice for you, John, is to get out there and play as much singles as possible. I'm sorry, there's not going to be any magical remedy here where you can just go out and be instantly comfortable with your singles play. But after watching your videos, as I said earlier, guys, John has posted a lot of videos of his strokes and of his match play as well. And after watching those videos, clearly you have the technical ability to play singles. John is about a 3.5 level player. I would say a strong 3.5 player. He's probably closer to 4.0 after watching him hit. And so he definitely has the technical ability to play singles, meaning he knows how to hit ground strokes. He knows how to hit volleys and serves and all that. So he's got the kind of the base technical abilities that are needed to play the game. But John, your head just isn't comfortable with the pace of play yet, and you need more experience. With more experience, you'll get more comfortable with how the points work out, how they move and flow back and forth, and you'll get more comfortable with the pace of play. And so get out there and play as much singles as you can. You obviously have a good jump on your doubles game, and keep that up. Don't put doubles to the side. I want you to keep playing doubles, but get out there and get as much singles play in as well as you possibly can, and you'll get more comfortable with it. If we can help you along the way as you continue to search for that singles game, definitely continue to post on the forums, and we'll help you out as much as possible. So, John, hopefully that's encouraging to you, and hopefully that answers your question. I look forward to seeing more of you on the forums as well. Take care. All right, time for our last question today on the podcast. And this question comes to us from Gary in the Philadelphia area. And Gary is a 4.0 level player. His topic is consistently hitting balls hard and deep, preferably with topspin from the baseline. He wrote to me and said, I'm running into two related problems, which I believe are the biggest technical obstacles to my getting to a higher level. When I play players at a higher level than myself, the problem is that I find myself replying to a ton of balls which are hit hard and deep to my baseline, driving me back. Some of the balls are hit with heavy topspin also, forcing me to swing at shoulder-high balls or higher. Some of the balls I can at least get back deep to their side, but I am eventually forced into a reply which is weak or short, and of course they put it away. So, problem number one, how do I respond strongly to the barrage of hard, deep balls I'm getting without a weak reply? And problem number two, how do I keep my shots hard and deep to their baseline to try and pin them back? All right, well, good question, Gary. And Gary posted a couple more sentences there as well, giving suggestions that he had thought of. And Gary, you were right on track with those. I'm just going to go over quickly here my thoughts. So, Gary, you've got the right idea. Gary said that some possible answers might be, let's see, he wrote here, use his core, shoulder turn, etc., taking the ball on the rise. Yeah, you've got the right idea. Anytime that you receive a well-hit deep shot to your side of the court, you've got two main options, and you mentioned both of those in your question. First, your first option is to take the ball on the rise, and that means taking the ball right off of the bounce. The ball has bounced on your side of the court. It's close to your baseline because your opponent has hit a good, strong, deep shot, and you're making contact with that ball as it's rising up off its bounce, so right off of the bounce, as opposed to letting it bounce, come up to the peak of its bounce, then come back down again and making contact at it on its way down at waist height. So taking the ball on the rise is one option you have. Your second option is, I got ahead of myself there, your second option is to back up and allow the ball to drop from the peak of its bounce and then hit it at a comfortable height, which is around waist height. So either way, either on the rise or allowing it to drop, we're making contact, hopefully, at waist height as often as possible, because that's usually the most comfortable place to make contact with the ball. Now, taking the ball on the rise helps you maintain a better position in the court. You're not having to back up and get farther and farther away from your opponent. However, the timing of this swing is much more difficult, taking it right off of the bounce. Conversely, when you back up and let the ball drop after its bounce, you'll be able to make a more comfortable swing timing-wise because you're buying yourself time by backing up. You're letting the ball get up to the top of its bounce and then drop again. However, you're sacrificing court positioning. You're getting farther away from your opponents, and that gives them more space to be able to work you back and forth. So there's pros and cons to both. Taking it on the rise is a little bit tougher technically. However, you're not sacrificing your positioning by having to move back close to the back fence to retrieve these tough, deep shots. And by the way, quickly, a third option that, in my opinion, is not an option at all is to just take the ball shoulder height and allow it to bounce and get up high out of your strike zone. That's not an option. It's possible to hit a good shot that way, but it's much more difficult than doing either of the other two options that I mentioned, taking it on the rise or backing up and letting it drop. Now, high-level players are able to take the ball on the rise with a moderately aggressive swing and hit a deep reply right back again to their opponents. And that's the shot that you need to develop if you want to move up to a 4.5 or a 5.0 level player. You can't allow your opponents to continue to push you around and just block the ball back and give them a weak reply. And that's exactly why you're writing to me. You've already identified that. But that's not an option. So we need to develop this on the rise shot if you want to move up to the next level of your game. Now, there's not really any secret technique to doing this. You want to make sure that you make a full swing at the ball like you normally would. But again, the timing is different. The timing is earlier. You're not waiting for the ball to bounce and then making your swing. You're essentially making the swing before the ball even bounces on your side, so that as you make contact, the ball has already bounced. It's coming up towards your racket. It's kind of a half volley kind of feel, but with a full ground stroke swing. And that's why this is difficult to do. This is a pretty high level type of shot that we're going to be attempting. But I want you to work on it, because this is going to be the difference for you between where you are now and a 4.5 level player from the baseline. One other tip, Gary, oftentimes making a slightly shorter backswing is helpful in timing your swing with the ball. Just make sure that you're still using a full follow through so that you can keep up with the pace of the rally and that you can still put some topspin on the ball and hit a solid shot back. This is not going to come to you right away, and it's going to take you some practice and some repetition. Go find a player that's stronger than you and get them to crush ground strokes at you for a half an hour and tell them to aim for the baseline and stand your ground and just stay right there on the baseline. Obviously, you're going to have to move up and back with each shot, but relatively speaking, stay right at the baseline and practice taking the ball right off the bounce and still making a good aggressive swing at the ball. And when I say aggressive, I'm not saying aggressive like you're going for a winner, but make a good confident swing. We're definitely not trying to just push the ball back and play, because that's not going to be good enough against the types of players that you're describing to me that you're playing against. So, Gary, you were on the right track. Get out there and just practice, practice, practice. Get as much repetition on that short hop ground stroke, that on the rise ground stroke. Get as much practice as that as you can, and you'll be able to get stronger at it and kind of fight off those strong baseline opponents that are keeping you pinned back behind the baseline. All right, Gary, thank you for your question. Hopefully that's helpful, and let me know if I can be of any further assistance. Take care and good luck with that. Okay, that does it for episode number 59 of the Essential Tennis Podcast. Listen, guys, I want to congratulate all my listeners out there. It seems like the quality of questions keep getting better and better. And those were three excellent questions that I answered today. Hopefully you all enjoyed listening to the answers to them, because all three of them were very well thought out. And I had a hard time fitting all that in. We did go a little bit over half an hour, but I probably could have spent easily an hour answering those three questions. But hopefully I hit on the most important points there, and gave you guys some great information on all three topics. As I mentioned earlier in the show, go check out the YouTube videos that I'm putting up at youtube.com/essentialtennis. Basically just putting up videos of the podcast recording right now, but in the future I definitely plan on doing more with that and doing some more video lessons and critique and that sort of thing. So that does it for this week. Take care, everybody, and good luck with your tennis.